For a few glorious moments in the 1990s, America experimented with drag. Then spent the next two decades acting extra straight in a collective gay panic. But let's focus on the good times, like when The Birdcage was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, my name's Sean Collier. I'm here with two fiddle players, and below the decks, it's Camila Adams.
Hello.
And Robin Hitchcock.
Chugging a red beer.
Titanic. What an episode.
That was so much fun. Yeah. Can I share a bit that I tried to do for the episode, but it just did not work, was when we went through expensive baubles.
Expensive baubles.
I wanted to cut in all the celebrities announcing Titanic at that Oscars because the list is ridiculous.
Oh my God.
It's like, because when I say ridiculous, I don't just mean, you know, luminaries, but there are, like, there's, you know, Denzel.
Russell Carpenter for Titanic.
And Warren Beatty.
The Oscar goes to James Cameron for Titanic.
I can't remember all of them.
Titanic.
But also just like, super random ones, like
Peter Lamont for Titanic,
James Horner, Titanic,
Deborah L. Scott for Titanic,
Charo.
No, but along those lines, like Cameron Diaz and Mike Myers. I didn't do that because not enough of them were available, but God, I had fun editing that episode.
That was a good one.
Corrections. Yes, Gaelic Storm is the band in steerage. That is really Gaelic Storm. And you discovered something about King's Dominion Amusement Park.
I think I cut that out of the episode. I cut out my mistake.
Oh, did you?
Yes, which I, that's my power as editor.
It's like, I can cut out when I'm wrong.
But yeah, King's Dominion has nothing to do with Jesus. That was my misunderstanding.
That is not the related to the current box office hit, King of Kings. It's not the dominion of that particular king.
It's not on our list, right? Minecraft is saving us there.
Yes.
Okay.
Minecraft is.
That's the only time I've felt grateful for the existence of the Minecraft.
I'm gonna go. I was
you were like, I'm walking
I'm
out.
I'm walking out. Minecraft has become enough of a thing that I'm like,
you have to,
I gotta know.
It's your duty as a film critic. We gotta get to,
I know, we have business. I was about to bring up the SS Sultana because my father called me about it yesterday.
Oh.
It exploded on the Mississippi River in 1865. More people died than on the Titanic.
Really?
It was overloaded. It's such a, he's writing about it right now for, I can't remember why. I think it's some anniversary. It was overstuffed with injured Union war veterans.
Oh my God.
That had been like smuggled aboard, and like someone was getting paid off to overload the ship, and the whole thing blew up, and nobody talks about it because like the same week that Lincoln got assassinated.
Oh dear.
So did your dad listen to the listen to the episode, or you just have a dad that calls with random facts like this?
I think he was vaguely aware that I was on the Titanic. I was on a Titanic kick right now. Let me at least tell you our new top 10. Get Out, hanging on. Number one, 95, followed by Fight Club at a 92 and a third. Carrie is in third place. Titanic neck and neck with Carrie. Silence of the Lambs at number five. Those are the only films above a 90. Alien has 89 and a half. Men in Black, 88 and a third. Raiders of the Lost Ark, Pulp Fiction, and Ghost. Pulp Fiction and Ghost are both 88. That is the threshold you now must beat.
You in danger, girl.
Wow.
To get into the top 10, Speed served well for a good 2 years.
Wow. It was, no, way longer.
When did we do the Speed episode?
We did it at the radio station. So
that was pre-COVID.
Pre-COVID, yeah, wow.
For a long time, you had to be faster than Speed to get into the top 10, and that's not a thing anymore. You have to make a better vase than Ghost. You have to spin clay better than Patrick Swayze to get into the
impossible.
Top 10.
Impossible.
Or will it happen today? What a delight. Yeah. The Birdcage. Good times.
I love this movie with my whole heart.
Yeah, same these. It's just, I quote this so often, all the time.
Camila and I were talking before we had the mic on about, like, we will have to resist the impulse to just be like, and that part, and that part, right.
Like,
and
I,
that part.
I really tried to look at it this time objectively, yes. And also just try to find something more, and hopefully, I know that you do your faxy job very well, Sean. Mm. So maybe there'll be something more, something bigger that we can talk about other than how much joy that Hank Azaria gives me.
Yeah.
Gotta say, but off the top, Agador is probably like my top, on my top 10 favorite movie character.
I laugh at every single thing he says, and like, we'll address the problematicness of it, but right. Like, it is too funny for me to care. And he should have been nominated for an Oscar.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Was Nathan Lane?
Nobody was.
We'll get to it.
Okay.
It's shocking, but to me, he has an arc, and it ends when he makes his "I could have danced all night" entrance. It's like he got his moments. Mm-hmm. He got his moment in front of the whole cast,
right?
In front of both families, and they all acknowledged him and his lovely voice.
Yes,
which I was a little bummed that he didn't at least get a chance to like go dress up at the end with everybody. I was like, Agador could have popped him on stage.
But he was a groomsman in the wedding. That was nice.
Yes.
I didn't even notice that. Mm-hmm. All these years, never noticed that.
Mm-hmm. I feel like he didn't dance with them because he had too many injuries from his time in shoes.
I will accept that.
What a ridiculous bit.
And because they all fear his heat.
And
his Guatemalan-ness. Mm-hmm.
And just the pratfalls that, like, it's a hilarious concept to begin with. And then the pratfalls he takes are like, just perfect.
And always just, like, in the background.
Yes.
Too. Like, that's what.
Mwah. Or even him walking like a penguin trying not to fall down. It's just great physical comedy.
Before
which
I
is
forget,
hard to do.
Right. And before, and I know, but there's one last thing. When they
I don't
first,
believe
I know, right? Before we get into everything, but before, when he first... When Robin Williams calls him, Agador Spartacus, to come in, and he, like, you know, does his penguin walk to, like, the doorway, and is like, what? I'm like, that is Professor. My dog would do that. He would never come all the way when I would call him. He would stop just at the doorway and look at me like, what?
I think he's underused, and that's weird because he's probably a billionaire off of The Simpsons, so it's not right. Like he needs it. Mm-hmm. But like, there are so few marquee Hank Azaria movie roles, and he's so good whenever he's in something.
You mean he should have a better career?
He should have a better movie, big screen career.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mystery. He's so good in Mystery Men.
Oh,
he's as good in Mystery Men as he is in this.
He loves to do some problematic characters. Like, this guy he believes in his heart that he can do anything. Like, and I don't think he can. But they have somebody new for Apu, right? Or does Apu just never speak anymore?
I think Apu doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, that's so
really?
Stupid!
Really? They just got rid of him completely?
I think.
I mean, I guess Apu is problematic in the writing and not just in the accent.
This used to be a skill, right? Like, this used to be, as recently as when I was in college, there was a hot minute where I was in line to play a Pakistani character.
Yikes.
And there was someone at the college, there was an old white guy at the college who could do every accent around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And this was just a thing in theater and film. Like, being able to do any accent was a marketable talent.
Yeah.
And Hank Azaria might be the best at it, period. It's just not a thing anymore.
But only if you take those accents to... farcical places.
That's true.
Right.
Which can be hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
That said, oh my God, one of the best comedic performances of all time.
It rises above this problem. It truly, truly does. He's so good. And everyone in this, let me tell you what happens.
Okay.
Tell me when.
Go.
Armand owns a nightclub and produces a good drag show, maybe even a great drag show, starring his partner Albert as the charismatic, if excitable, Starina. His son turns up with news. He's getting married to pre-Ally McBeal, and her dad's a Republican senator. The family needs to play it straight, drop their pinkies, and smear their mustard for a night so the union can proceed. Unfortunately, biological mother Barbara is stuck in traffic, loving servant Agador Spartacus can't walk in shoes, and the family home has more flamboyant housewares than a fire sale at Home Goods. Albert steps in as dear old mother, utterly charming the clueless senator, but after one mix-up too many, the truth comes out and things look bleak. And guess what? The press is here. Albert dresses the senator and his wife up as queens and struts them out of trouble. The kids get married and we all do an eclectic celebration of the dance.
Well done.
I left something. Oh, I left the other senator's
scandal. The biological mother is, I don't think she's named Barbara. That is
Catherine.
Pre-Ally McBeal is named Barbara.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Which it is very silly to have a 18-year-old in 1996 named Barbara and a 60-something-year-old named Kevin.
Catherine. Christine Baranski is Catherine. Just Camila different. Knew. They're both playing significantly younger.
Yeah. No kidding.
They're both late 20s this.
So Dan Futterman was in one of my favorite movies, Big Girls Don't Cry, They Get Even, by the great Joan Micklyn Silver. And he was playing a 20-year-old then, which was like 92.
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, because I had the hardest time. I was like, has he been in anything else? And
he's also a 2-time Academy Award nominated screenwriter.
Really?
Yes, he wrote Capote and Foxcatcher.
Wow.
Yeah. And Grant Heslov, who's one of the Inquirer reporters, is a Academy Award winning producer.
Wow.
Yes. Oh, he has a Best Picture Oscar for, I think, Argo?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Way to diversify.
Uh-huh.
But we can all agree that Val is the villain here, right?
We need to talk about Val.
Yeah, I mean, it's not... The drama is not the thing. The farce is the thing of this movie, right? So it kind of... It doesn't bring it down too much, but like... There's a lot of just like, well, we're going to be us now. Now we're not. Now we are. Now we are. Now right. We're not.
Yeah.
Like, I love you, son. Like that doesn't really play into the story.
When he first asks Robin that he wants him to do this, and then Robin's like, I don't want to be someone else. Do you want me to be someone else?
Right.
The heartbreak in his voice when he says that. Oh, my God. And from that point, I'm just like, fuck you, Val. How dare you?
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like he should be at a place. What is he? He's 20,
right? Mm-hmm.
He should be at a place where he's already dealt with this, quote unquote, I'm embarrassed by my two dads or whatever.
I think they are trying to go with in Miami, everybody's fine with people being gay,
right?
Which I don't think is true,
right?
Right, especially back then. I mean,
well, I don't know what South Beach is like necessarily. So I mean, specifically wherever gay. They were. Okay,
I mean, I've never been to that part of Florida, but that's my understanding, at least through pop culture osmosis. I think that one thing about Val as the villain is that like it is easy for us to forget in 2025, like. This is one of the few ways that my life or that our lives are better than they were 30 years ago is like it was pretty like taboo to be gay, especially gay with a family.
Yeah.
Right. And so like absolutely a conservative senator in this situation would be like, absolutely not. I will never be elected again.
I mean, I understand why he thinks he has to do all this.
Yes.
But it's also like, okay, so as even going as far as changing the last name upon the first meeting, you were trying to marry this girl.
Yeah, what's your end game?
Yeah, what's the long, what's happening? Like, what are we doing?
Also, this was probably the first time I've seen this movie where that really made me mad. I was just like, oh, God, they're not even allowed to be Jewish. Oh, I did want to say Ally McBeal, not innocent, right? Like,
no.
We all hate Val.
Oh, but, yeah.
Like, I'm not letting Barbie off the hook.
Oh, no, absolutely.
My least favorite part of this movie is when she's like, okay, I guess I won't marry you. I would have liked to be part of your family. It's like, you're making the call.
Right, yes.
Yeah, it would have been really easy to say no, fuck off.
That is a beautiful sentence, though.
Yeah.
But she is making the wrong choice.
Yeah. How are we upset during the Birdcage episode?
I know. Okay, let's go back to how fun this movie is.
It was released March 8th, 1996, the 8th number one movie of that year. It won its opening weekend with $18.2 million, easily beating Homeward Bound 2, Lost in San Francisco, which I do clearly remember seeing in the theater, and Hellraiser Bloodline was in 5th. Stayed at number one for 4 weekends. This is a 4-week.
No memory of this being a hit.
I mean, I think I was kind of aware of it.
I was absolutely aware of it, but I 11, don't remember it being a box office 4-week winner.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure I saw it in the theater.
It's a big hit, in fact. During that reign, there wasn't a lot coming out. It held off executive decision Diabolique, Sergeant Bilko, didn't fall to third until weekend number 5, behind Primal Fear and A Thin Line Between Love and Hate. And even then, that was close. All three of those were within $600,000 of one another. Oh, it made $124 million.
That's a lot.
This is the 9th top-grossing film of 1996.
Wow.
It made more money than A Time to Kill, Scream, Disney's Hunchback of Notre Dame, Space Jam, and The English Patient all made less money than The Birdcage.
The English Patient.
Mm-hmm.
I get Best the power, picture winner. Power of Robin Williams. And
I mean, he was so hot at this moment.
Yeah.
Well, this is what I might be just too young to remember, as I kind of referenced in the introduction. Were we having a moment where we were like, maybe we're cool with all of this as a culture?
I think it was more of we're cool with, and I hate to say it like this, but we're cool with making fun of them. Because this is also the same time as, you know, like Living Color, Men on Film.
Hated it.
You know, those skits and that kind of stuff. Like, it's...
Which I truly loved as a child.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I mean, think it wasn't necessarily like, oh, we're so comfortable that we can now explore what their lifestyle is like. Mm-hmm. It's that, oh, they're funny. You know? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
That's...
You're so right.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Even Ellen... Because Ellen was maybe a year or two later?
Maybe.
I think so.
You know, that was in the context of a sitcom episode, of a sitcom episode.
I do think you're right. And mm-hmm. I think that this movie was part of it. And I do want to share that I asked my group chat before this. I was like, I know you all love The Birdcage. What do I need to mention? Mm. And one of them said that her dad, like, changed his opinion on gay marriage because of the bench scene. Oh, like, when he's like, you make me laugh and I'll follow you anywhere.
I almost started crying.
I know. It's so beautiful. And my friend's dad was like, you know what? Let him get married.
Oh, which, that's
like,
great.
I mean, art is powerful. And, yeah. like, yeah. I think this, and, like, talking about drag, like, this was a year or two after To Wong Fu and
Mrs. Doubtfire
and
even.
Priscilla. And yes, mm-hmm. so like I do think Camille is totally right that there's an element of making fun, but it's also not hiding it in a way that really did change hearts and minds.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also include like Philadelphia, which like has its own really problematic tropes. But yeah. I definitely know people who were like, well, if Tom Hanks is allowed to be, then it's okay.
Right.
It's tricky because that's like the example that you gave, that's clearly a part of acceptance is this kind of like, not celebration, but like loving camp entertainment thing. You know, when I was a kid, when I was 18, 20, I didn't like Will and Grace because I thought that not Will, but the other
Jack.
Guy, Jack, was such a stereotype.
I mean, he is.
He is. And it didn't occur to me that, yeah, that's part of a package that does, as you said, win hearts and minds.
Yeah.
But I don't know if we figured out the next step.
Yeah.
I mean,
all the way.
Like I said, it's so much better than it was in the 90s.
Yeah.
Still not great.
Right.
Yeah, it's not great. I would say that media is doing a hell of a lot better at by just adding trans or gay or queer characters in films and movies and or in TV shows without that just being that being their identity. Like that's their whole identity. That's it. They're it's just more of a, by the way, this person is, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I do appreciate that.
I do want to, sorry, I want to quickly share Raina Dearwater, who actually works for GLAAD in their like media awards department. Her Letterboxd review says, this film demonstrates an important part of gay culture, which is it's so fun and cool and bright and brilliant and full of love to be gay and so lame and dull to be straight. And as a straight person, I was like, correct.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's, I hate to you know, just be posturing, but like a lot of times when people are like, there are two genders, there are and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, your world's so so bad. You live in a simple place where we all go to Whataburger and go home. Over here, there's an interesting variety of human beings that you will never know.
Exactly.
I don't know.
People be who they are makes them more happy and interesting and good to be around.
Right.
I,
it's the right thing to do.
Just also safe. Safe.
Yes. This won't apply to our primarily Pittsburgh audience, but if you are somewhere where you can go see the new musical of Some Like It Hot, which is touring, it's in
Isn't
Pittsburgh
Emma
this week.
Isn't Emma Ruffin involved in that?
I don't know.
Okay.
But this is a new musical adaptation. It's primarily the plot of Some Like It Hot with new music and moves it to the 30s, and there's a couple of changes. And at the risk of a slight spoiler, the biggest change is that Daphne in the second act is like, no, I'm going to stay Daphne.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
And has a song about feeling like herself for the first time.
Oh my God,
and,
I love
you know,
it.
And it felt kind of like The Birdcage in like, this is a fun entertainment. This is crowd pleasing. This is delightful. And by the way, here's the bench scene.
Yeah.
And that can be very effective.
And they're also excellent parents. Mm-hmm. Like the fact that they don't get super mad at Val and just are like, we'll do what you need us to. Mm-hmm. Like, especially Albert, who is really being put in this horrible, horrible position. Mm-hmm. Is like, I love you so much. I will do it.
Like, my heart is breaking, but I will do it.
Yeah.
And, oh, God. Just like, how dare you hurt Albert like that?
We're getting at something very real here, that this movie is hilarious. A lot of movies are hilarious. Right. I think it occupies the place that it does in our hearts and a lot of people's hearts because there's so much behind it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And facts. Expensive baubles.
Expensive baubles.
Zero, is that right?
One nomination.
Production design or art direction?
Nominated for art direction.
I just found out that Bo Welch and Catherine O'Hara have been married since the 90s.
Hmm.
Yeah. Bo Welch is the production designer of this movie and also Beetlejuice and Edward Scissorhands. He's a genius.
Oh.
Yeah. Lost best art direction to The English Patient.
Yeah, it was. The English Patient was an unstoppable force that year. I mean, Lauren Bacall should have an Oscar.
By the way, that is also true. The only nomination for our past subject, Romeo and Juliet, was also only best art direction in the same year.
Wow, we covered a lot in 96.
I mean, minimum Hank Azaria. Mm.
Oh, I think minimum Robin Williams.
Okay, interesting.
I mean, Hank Azaria, sure. That's not the kind of role that gets nominated a lot. There's no excuse for Robin Williams not being nominated.
I mean, sure it does. We just recently had Marissa Tomei winning.
Yeah, right? I guess.
I feel like Nathan Lane should have definitely been nominated.
That year, Cuba Gooding Jr. won.
Right.
Yeah, like comic...
we're sorry. We don't... Try not to speak his name.
Voldemort? Is that the...
Yeah. Yeah, so I do think he should have been nominated. My number two before Robin Williams is Gene Hackman.
Mm-hmm.
That foliage.
Oh my God.
We decided to drive down to see the seasons change. But it's just so magical to me to come from the north where it's cold to the south where it's warm. See the tremendous differences from region to region in this incredible country of ours. Mm. The hills, the mountains. Talk about your purple mountains, Majesty. Just fantastic. Red leaves, purple mountains, green fields, and the roads, black. Cutting through the green. All the colors. The trees. Pennsylvania's nice, too.
I
was in fucking tears.
I cannot keep it together during that monologue. And then also, I don't understand. It's just brilliant.
I think that if no one had said cut, he would have been there for... the rest of his life. Just on in the grass by the roads.
And Ohio. And they're like,
he is an example of the Whataburger person who you're talking about. He just has a very limited scope on the world.
Well, it's perfection, his straight man to the. in this film. But I think that Nathan Lane should have been nominated for an Oscar for when he puts on a suit.
That scene
where he is just
simultaneously heartbreaking and hilarious.
Right? Like, he is just like so uncomfortable, and it's like so many fucking layers here. Like, Nathan Lane, like, you roll in, like, yes, he's a gay man, but he doesn't, you know, he's not Albert. And so he's playing Albert, playing this streak. Like, it's just too much. And I can't. And it's just like, you are working overtime, and God bless you for it.
It's true.
Well, and every exclamation, every like, any stimulus whatsoever can make him have like burst like a little fountain. Yes. At any time. It's funny. There has to be 20, and they're all funny.
Every time, fine with all four of them getting nominations.
Yeah. Well, Nathan Lane at least got a Globe nomination for Best Actor in a Comedy, lost to Tom Cruise and Jerry Maguire.
The Golden Globes loved Tom Cruise. Mm-hmm.
It was also nominated for Best Musical or Comedy, but lost to Evita.
Come on.
I secretly love Evita.
I've never seen Evita.
I guess it's
Evita.
Not a secret anymore. Antonio Banderas is so hot.
I don't doubt it.
Madonna, one of the people who, she's the one who said, what a shocker.
What a shocker.
When she gave her Titanic Oscar. Mm.
But the one big expensive bauble, this won the big SAG award.
Oh,
this one SAG Best Cast.
And that was like the second SAG awards, or third maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Correct.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh. Did Dan Futterman and Calista Flockhart make the cut?
Mm. Explain how that works.
Okay, so every SAG awards for the best ensemble, which is basically their best picture, I believe the producers submit the cast that is part of the ensemble.
This is the cast.
Yes, and as we discuss in our Get Out episode, sometimes there are horrifying omissions like Betty Gabriel in Get Out.
Hank Azaria, Christine Bransky, Dan Futterman, Gene Hackman, Nathan Lane, Diane Wiest, Robin Williams. So the exclusion is Calista Flockhart.
Yeah, this is because she's pre-Ally McBeal, pre-Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Just a lady. I had an improv student who went to high school with her.
For a minute, I forgot that improv students can be older. Sorry.
I always call them kids.
Right. Yeah. That's weird. Yeah. It won over The English Patient, Marvin's Room, a movie I feel like I'm hearing about for the first time.
It's Diane Keaton and Meryl Streep and Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
I seen that movie.
Yeah.
Shine and Sling Blade. Shine cleaned up that year. Is Shine good?
I don't think I've seen
Shine. I struggle with Shine because it is about mental illness, and it's not my mental illness, but I felt red flags all over the place.
Weren't like three of what you just named all about mental illness?
Shine, Sling Blade, grief, and Sling Blade is about a cognitive disability and also poverty. I think I don't remember that movie.
I sure do like them French fried potatoes.
No, you don't, Oprah.
Yeah, I saw it, and I don't remember it.
I didn't put this on the list, but the best thing I learned is, I guess Hank Azaria and Billy Bob Thornton are very close.
That makes sense.
And they were both trying to get those respective characters down.
Oh.
Agador and, you know, cognitively disabled Southern guy, and just drove around together for a week, for a couple weeks in character, interacting. As Agador.
What I would give for like a dash cam of that. Oh my gosh.
Oh, that's my God.
Best thing I've ever heard.
It is.
Crap. Here's the timeline for the source material, because I didn't truly know it. La Cage aux Folles was a play first.
Thank you.
By the way, I found out literally today when I was looking up how to pronounce it that it means the cage of crazies. Mm. And I have thought for, what are we at, 29 years, that foal meant bird.
No, that's not what that means. He wrote it. It opened in 1973. It ran for years. It was adapted into a French language film in 1978. That movie was nominated for 3 Oscars.
Yeah, it was nominated for Best Director, Best Screenplay, and I don't know what. Which is why I have seen it as part of my Oscars quest. It is extremely French.
Is it good?
Sure.
Lost.
I am glad that we have this tightened up remake.
Edouard Molinaro lost Best Director to Robert Benton for Kramer vs. Kramer. It also lost Screenplay to Kramer vs. Kramer. It lost Costume Design to All That Jazz. The film is the source material. This is an adaptation of that movie.
Oh, interesting.
Not of the play. It did also become a musical in 1983. The Broadway version, the book is by Harvey Fierstein.
Huh.
And it ran for 4 years. It won 6 Tonys. It's been revived twice. Both of those won the Best Revival Tony. Wow. La Cage aux Folles is a very big musical that came out considerably after the French movie. But that has nothing to do with the Birdcage, more or less. Okay. Or both are adaptations of the same thing, I guess I should say. By the way, this was the first real project by Nichols and May. Since they weren't Nichols and May anymore.
Okay. I was like, excuse right. you, Sean.
The comedy act okay. disbanded in 1961.
I know.
Elaine May has a small appearance in The Graduate. They popped up together on talk shows. They did political events. Allegedly, there's a production of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf in Connecticut in 1980 that they both acted in.
Oh my God, that would be amazing.
But they didn't, like, we're sitting down and doing a character together for, you know, 25 years.
Yeah.
And came back with this and then followed it with Primary Colors.
I mean, this is such a good example of their dynamic where, like, you know, Elaine May is the funny one. Like, I know that, like, Mike Nichols is a genius, but she was clearly, like, the more raw comedic talent. And then he's, like, the pool skimmer.
Yeah.
Right? He like pulls it all together, which is an equally important comedic skill.
Sure.
Right? And so it makes so much sense to me that he went on to be primarily a director and she went on to be primarily a screenwriter.
And a brief casting note, Robin Williams was cast as Albert.
Oh, really?
Was cast in the Nathan Lane role.
And were they like too close to Doubtfire?
That's what he thought. It was Robin and Steve Martin was going to be Armand.
Okay.
Steve Martin dropped out just scheduling stuff, and that's when Robin said, you know, I don't really want to do Mrs. Doubtfire again. So
good for
asked him, right? to be Armand instead.
I think Steve Martin would have been a good Armand, too.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely could have done it. I don't know. I wish Robin Williams would have won Best Actor. I think he's more than in Good Will Hunting or whatever your preferred, you know, Robin Williams shows his range performance. Mm-hmm. There's so much acting here because it's so subtle and so good while still being so... I just had the wall sponge painted, Val. Is as funny as anything in the movie with barely a calorie burned in the delivery of that line.
I want to live in that house.
Or even when he's just like, you're mad, but let me tell you why. So the house, like... It looks uncomfortable to me. Like, everything is just, it looks, even before the transformation, everything just looks cluttered and hard.
Okay. There's wallpaper on a door. I'm like, yes.
I know, that part, is just like, I'm just like, Golden Girls. It's Miami, yes. But also, it's like, I mean, so many phallic statues. Like, I love dick, too. But I mean... Do we need so many hard penises all around as decor?
I will say that montage of de-gaying the house is magnificent. And it's a shame that we're recording like 2 days before the remake of The Wedding Banquet comes out, because that also has a de-gaying the house in the trailer. So anyway,
but
spoilers for You Can't Handle the Truth, even though I've never seen that movie, I probably love it.
So also where Val is... the villain, it's not just what he's asking them to do, it's how. And the way he speaks to Robin, to their friends or the dancers or whatever, while they're de-gaying the house or whatever, like, it's just like he's just rude to everybody. And I get it, it's tense, but come on,
you're right.
Like, whereas Agador, dear sweet Agador,
straight looking.
That's Hank Azaria brought that shirt out again on his Instagram account, and that's why I thought it was some sort of anniversary.
Oh.
It's like the 29th anniversary of the movie this year, but yes.
Every
like,
year. Worth celebrating every year.
What's he doing with Springsteen now? He just tours and sings?
He has a band.
He just has a Springsteen cover band?
Yes.
Just because... I'll do whatever the hell I want. Because
I'm Hank fucking Azaria.
I know he's posted videos... singing Born to Run as 10 different Simpsons characters.
Oh my gosh, I've seen
that, but I think he just tours around doing Bruce and who great.
Right.
Go and
passion projects.
Right. Mm-hmm. If he were to come here, I'd probably go, I'd buy
absolutely.
A ticket. I don't even like, sorry, Bruce Springsteen.
I was going to say, get out. And then I was like, we're in your house.
I tried to hold Robin back and myself mentally. From afar, that's okay.
It's gonna be okay.
Yeah, but
read through it, guys.
The character is so loving and kind and warm. You know, it's an indictment to so much like mean, angry comedy.
Yeah.
Because when you're that nice, can make the I don't want it. No, I don't want witch wigs. Like, that's so much funnier because he's so loving and we're...
Keeps just wearing great. Those shoes.
And the damn soup situation, like, just the way he just like tick, 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 and it just escalates. And he's like, why you call it sweet and sour? So like, why you call it best in soup? And he's just clutching like a fistful of shrimp the whole time.
And the shot of everybody at the table taking one spoonful and then being like, no. Excellent Mike Nichols direction.
I think it works as well as it does because the subject matter is fresh or was fresh in 1996. I don't know. It still feels fresh. It feels very modern and contemporary subject matter with such classic comedic sensibilities. Mm-hmm. When you put this on your YouTube or something, it's like, do you want to watch Tu Wong Fu? Do you want to watch other big, bold, flamboyant comedies of the 90s? I'm like, the movie this is most like is The Producers. Like, this has that kind of very classic back and forth. I made you short. Like, the very well written.
Wasn't Nathan Lane in the musical version of The
Producers? I think so.
Yes.
So wait, there you go.
Him and Matthew Broderick?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's such polished, timeless comedy in such a contemporary setting. And that's why I think it works so well.
I don't know, man. Like, I just can't get enough of this movie. And
I would like to speculate about the gender and sexuality of these characters, if we may. Yeah, so Val at the beginning says, I'm getting married, it's a girl. So I'm like, presumptive bisexual Val?
Maybe.
And does that make us slightly more forgiving for what an awful person he is in this film?
I would have liked to have, if that were the case, I don't know if I would have been like slightly less forgiving. I don't know if I'm just like real chafed about this because I'm a parent now. I don't remember being this pissed off about it, like, you know, in 96 or however many times I've seen it prior to this. But I don't know, like, if he were bi, like, does that make
not really?
Yeah,
no,
but it's an interesting character.
It is addition. One throwaway line, and I'm like, I'm zeroing in on it, and then also zeroing in on Albert being so offended when he says you're not a woman. And so I'm like, what is Albert's gender chaos?
Yes, it's just chaos.
Yes.
He is an agent of chaos.
Yes.
He is just, I just feel like he likes to fucking argue for argument's sake sometimes.
Yes.
He's just very dramatic. Absolutely drama queen. Like, this is Albert is drama queen when I think of that. And
I said to an NB friend recently, it's like, more people should know you, because in the world, some people are men and some people are women, and you are not. Because there are some people who are like, you're not one of those two. You're something else. It's
isn't
not
that great.
Yeah.
Right.
I do. When you brought up, he loves to argue. Mm. I think that one of the things that's so great about this play and movie is how much he and the senator get along.
Right.
And I was thinking, like, I don't know how much Albert is lying about his conservative views.
Yeah, exactly. Like, how much of your story, this backstory or whatever story you're telling, is true and false? Are you just a performer? Like, this is just...
Right.
Let the fetus go down with the ship.
Right.
Right. Like, I feel like that is something that Albert would say at a party with his real friends.
Right.
But I love how much they are instantly, like, taken with each other.
I know.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's so crazy. And then, and that brings me to Diane Weiss. The poor thing. Like, I love how there is, like, a dramatic shift with her. And she does this often, and that's one of the reasons why I love her. Is like, she'll be starting off talking completely like this, and everything is so Kevin, and then finally she's like, Kevin, like, her voice drops a whole octave, and it's just like, you've had enough candy. Like, I love that.
And I'm as pretty as any of these girls.
Someone has to like me best. Another line. That's a line that I say.
Yes.
I've been studying the evidence. Yes, Agador is in the wedding party at the end. I think he's wearing shoes. I think he'd be shorter.
Maybe he learned. Mm-hmm. He was like, I can't let this bring me down, literally.
I'm not right anymore. There is no point. I never wish.
Do you have a reading on his gender?
Delight.
Yeah.
Come on, Gloria. I cannot listen to like Gloria Estefan without thinking of him. Or even, she was high for the money. Like, anytime I hear the song, I hear him say, that's right.
Shall we rate it?
Yeah. Did we talk about the trailer?
No.
Pop, I'm getting married. It's a girl. I met her at school. It's this wonderful, are you upset? But let me tell you why.
Don't use that tone to me.
What tone?
That sarcastic, contemptuous tone that means you know everything because you're a man and I know nothing because I'm a woman.
You're not a woman.
Oh, you bastard.
Are you crazy? You can't get married. It's out of the question.
Who's his father? His father is in the arts.
You do an eclectic celebration of the dance. You do Fosse, Fosse, Fosse. You do Martha Graham, Martha Graham, Martha Graham. Or Madonna, Madonna, Madonna.
But you keep it all inside.
What does the mother do? She's a housewife.
Oh, I could play it straight.
You take your knife and you smear. Men smear. Smear, that's it.
I'm gonna pierce the toast.
Call me.
Perfect.
Senator Keeley, Mrs. Keeley, come here and give me a hug.
Something very strange is going on.
The
perfect
trailer. Oh, I thought it was a little underwhelming.
Yeah,
oh.
Me too. And see, also, like, I don't know why they bothered to do like the misdirection in the film where the audience is supposed to think that he's having an affair. Like, when it's given away right there immediately in the trailer.
I mean, that's a common issue because the people editing the trailer they don't have the same motivation as the people making the movie. But what I said when I said perfect trailer, I think this trailer has some of the best lines. So that you're like, oh, this movie's going to be really funny. And it almost like gives you that feeling of, oh, but they're ruining all the funny parts. But then there's so many funny parts that no, they aren't.
Yeah. I mean, in that sense, you are correct. Mm-hmm. But I think that what is like missing a lot of the flair. Like there's no performance scenes from the club, which is what I thought was missing.
Yeah. It feels a lot straighter of a comedy
right.
in the trailer than it really is. And
those are good points.
This is one of those just useful letterbox lists, LGBT films with happy endings.
Oh, yay. Aww.
Because,
yeah,
you know,
problematic tropes.
There's a lot that go the other way.
Oh, I wanted to call out the Pyrrhon joke. That one took me out this time.
He's just the aspirin with the A and the S script.
Which also, brilliant!
Right? Mm-hmm.
That is genuinely brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And just like the way that he's so thankful and grateful for it. Oh, Agador, you're such a sweetheart. Oh, love you. Blah, blah, blah.
Peasant soup aside, Agador is really good at his job.
Apparently.
And walking in shoes.
Apparently, he studied, you know, Judy Garland's handler for some of those scenes.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
That makes me want to watch Judy again, which is a sentence no one has ever said.
Yeah.
Including Renee Zellweger.
Right, exactly.
God, Renee Zellweger won an Oscar recently. Isn't that weird?
She's a 2-time Academy Award winner, like Gene Hackman and Diane Weiss.
Wow. Mm. I say 89. Robin?
91.
Camila?
97.
Woo!
Wow.
Hot.
Yeah.
Gonna investigate to see if that...
I was trying to find, like, I don't have all of my ratings, and I was trying to see. Like, I don't remember a lot of stuff that's on here, but... Yeah, I guess, you know, it's more. I liked it more than Purple Rain. I like it more than Purple Rain and Seven, apparently.
That's valid.
Yeah. But also, I would like to point out, I have questions about Catherine. Speaking of throwaway lines, I would have liked something in there just to say that they agreed that she was not going to contact Val. Because how the fuck?
Like, I mean,
20 whole years?
I inferred that, but you're right that it would be easier to accept it if it was like this was always part of the deal.
Right.
We discussed last week Robin's top rating ever was for Speed. My top rating ever is for E.T. the Extraterrestrial. Camila's to date was for Carrie, also a 97.
Really? Wow.
What is a better movie, The Birdcage or Carrie?
They just is two different. I know. Scratch two different itches.
It's a tear.
Yeah. Two different itches.
But we need to know through almost 200 episodes, what's your best movie that we've watched?
I can't sleep on it. Because it's like I would watch Birdcage more than I would rewatch Carrie.
Probably.
But as far as like stylization, mm-hmm. themes and mm-hmm. blah, blah, it's Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
Give it some thought.
Yeah.
Come back next time.
To be continued.
In any case, we are on 92 and a third. Never mind that list I just gave you.
Oh, wow. Here we go.
This is number 2 all time.
Wow. Perfect.
Same score as Fight Club. The highest, the tiebreaker is the highest individual score. That was also Camila gave Fight Club a 96, but gave The Birdcage a 97. Wow. So this is our second favorite ever.
That's amazing.
Apologies to Ghost, which had one episode on the top 10. Well, one episode at number 10. My. And now is 11. Pulp Fiction remains the dividing line for our top 10. Birdcage to the bingo card. I feel like mistaken identity just generally.
Yeah. Yes.
It's
also grocery shopping.
Mm.
When does that happen?
When Albert goes to the markets.
Oh, you're right.
And he's like, the piglet's in town. Oh. The piglet is home.
Albert, I love you.
I know.
He's
a schmoops.
None of us are from Florida.
Trump?
No.
Okay.
Ooh, I forgot. Oh, no, there it is. Nope, that's it. We're 1 year off for the anniversary one.
This is not the spirit of Geek to Beauty, but
no.
some of Albert's transitions.
I mean, also, we got to say, the late, great Gene Hackman looks really good in drag.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Talk of springtime?
I still have that on here.
Talk of springtime.
Oh, yeah, talk of springtime.
Is that when they were driving with the roads and the trees?
Yeah, that's fall. Foliage.
Oh,
yes.
It was foliage. Never mind. So, time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Camila, kick it off.
It's not a movie, but I watched Adolescence on Netflix.
Mm. How'd that go?
I think it would have been strong. I think it was 4 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would have been much stronger if it had just been like that, just a 1 hour short. Mm. Like just the one episode kind of stands alone on itself.
Mm-hmm.
The other 4 don't really give you much else.
Yeah.
But I really do I love the fact that each episode was done in one shot, one take.
It's incredible. I mean, I haven't watched this show yet, but I'm just so impressed with it.
Right? Like that, because I didn't catch on until the third episode. Like I'm watching things and I'm like, wait a minute. Is this all in one fucking take?
That's awesome.
And so it's not something you notice. And I also like to shout out the dad, Stephen Graham. I've always loved him.
He's in Snatch?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Lockstock or both?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think he was in Lockstock.
Okay.
But he was definitely in Snatch.
Yes.
And I've always loved him since Snatch.
Yeah.
It would just be just random stuff. Oh, there's that guy. There's that guy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but now he's the leading, he's the dad and he's just so good. His range is excellent. And I love this dude. I will watch anything that he's in. And I saw for the first time The Accountant.
Oh, yeah, sequel's coming
out.
Yeah, and that's why I was like, well, maybe, you know, what did I miss?
I've also never seen it.
It is really good.
Oh!
I did not expect that at all.
All right, and sold.
John Bernthal comes through, and this, and I'm assuming from watching this one and then seeing the trailers for the second one, they're going to be two different tones completely.
Oh.
Like, the second one looks like it's going to be lighter, more like a buddy comedy.
Oh,
not even like a comedy, but like a buddy dark comedy, maybe.
Direction I like to hear about.
Right. This one's a little darker, and I like that, and it's just more subtle. But there are hints of comedy in it.
Anna Kendrick's in it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's kind of, she's fine. But a little, they don't overuse her, which I like.
Okay.
When it's time for her to go, she's gone. So, but I would recommend that. That's it.
I had to do a thing I'm finding myself doing more and more often, which is Google the phrase Sean Collier the Accountant review. I've seen it, and apparently I liked it. The Accountant is big, dumb Hollywood fun, I wrote.
Well, yeah, and it's fucking 10 years old. We're coming out with the second one
2016.
10 years later.
Yeah.
I mean, Heat 2 is allegedly coming soon.
Heat 2?
You don't know about Heat 2?
No.
Oh, Michael Mann wrote a novel called Heat 2 and is adapting it right now into a screenplay.
Get out.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well,
maybe I'll enjoy The Accountant 2. Robin?
I watched G20 with Viola Davis as the president in a Die Hard situation in Cape Town. So it was very much like, oh, I love everything about this. But it's not great. Like, she's awesome, obviously. Right. And it's really fun action. Mm-hmm. But
is it a show or a
It's
movie?
Just a movie. Okay. Thank God. There's like a whole business. The plot is about like crypto. And like, I genuinely don't know if he ends up Hans Grubering or if he actually has an ideology. And I don't care. But also, I can't remember her name. The little girl from Blackish. Oh, is in it. And she grew up.
It's like, when did you become an adult?
And I was like, like, I don't think I would have recognized her. I mean, and she was great. She's
definitely
wonderful.
At that age now.
Marcy Martin.
Yeah. Yes. When I see little kid actors growing up. It's like, what?
Who let this happen? And a couple things that I saw in the theater, but are probably going to be gone from theaters by the time you hear this. Hell of a Summer. Did you see that?
No, it didn't come out at the right time. Oh,
okay. I mean, it seems like something you would like, and I'm curious if you will.
I was pumped. The trailer was good.
Yeah.
And I was pumped for it and showed Mary Beth the trailer and everything. And then every review I've heard has made me not want to go because I feel like I'm going to be disappointed.
I think that if you have spare time, you should watch it because you might, like, you know, it is sending up a genre that you are obsessed with. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think you'll like it in that level. But, like, it's just, it's made by babies. It is. I said this is the first movie I've seen directed by someone who was not alive on September 11th, 2001. Oh, wow. And one of the directors was. But, like, you can tell it's made by babies.
I want to catch up to The Drop before I catch up to that.
Oh, yeah. Because
I think I might actually like The Drop.
I keep thinking about going to see The Drop, even though that doesn't seem like the kind of thing I'm like. But slim pickings right now, which is also why I saw Sacramento, which is...
What's Sacramento?
It is a real pain, but written by the other cousin. Like, very literally. I mean, it's in Sacramento instead of... They're not on a Holocaust tour or anything like that, but deals with grief, deals with what do you do with an adult fuck-up. But it's written by the adult fuck up. And, you know, like, spoilers, he's not the real fuck up, which is kind of the thing that was missing from A Real Pain.
Yeah.
Ultimately, A Real Pain is a significantly better movie. Mm-hmm. But if you liked A Real Pain, I highly recommend Sacramento. Mm. I've also had not a crush on because he's too young, but like an admiration and affection for Michael Ingarano. I'm failing with names today, who wrote and I want to say directed and stars in it as the alleged fuck up, since he was in Almost Famous as the young version of the main character, and he finds out he's 11 years old and goes, 11?
11?
So you skip fifth grade. There's too much padding in the grades. I taught elementary school.
11!
So I was very happy that he got to make this movie.
I barely have anything because I...
You were in Italy!
Went on
Welcome back!
The honeymoon, everybody. It was really great. We did go to the movies, like, in one of the first days with some time to kill and still a little tired and not fully in there. The Last Showgirl had just come out.
Oh.
And we found a screening English language with Italian subtitles, which is not the norm.
Right.
That's like finding an open caption screening.
It's
they do it, but it's
God,
not
I
everywhere.
I love that those exist.
It's funny, like, same time you were in Italy, another one of my friends went to Italy. Like, she's like, for her 50th birthday, she's like, fuck it, I'm going to go to Italy by myself.
Oh, I love that.
So shout out, Brandy.
It was very, very crowded. We went at this time to avoid the crowds, and then very early on, one of the tour guys explained that it is the Catholic Jubilee. It's like every 25 years.
Oh dear.
In theory, all Catholics are supposed to go to Rome, like Muslims going to Mecca.
Huh.
Like that happens all the time, right?
That happens all the time. Apparently this happens every 25 years.
Dear.
So there's just a lot of people staring at buildings, but it was fine because we had the right tour guide passes and everything.
Oh,
but
good.
And perfect weather. Anyway, I'm just talking about my vacation now. Last Showgirl, still like it. Mary Beth liked it a lot. We wanted to see this movie. We didn't have time for a second movie. There are posters everywhere for this movie, Eden, which is not out here for another 4 or 5 months. A Ron Howard survival thriller film with Jude Law and Sydney Sweeney and Vanessa Kirby. And we kept trying and never made it happen. And now when that comes out, I'll be able to go, ah, it would have been so cool to see this 4 months ago and tell everybody. Or, man, am I glad I didn't spend 2 hours of my honeymoon watching this crappy movie.
Right.
And just to include it, we're titling movies wrong. They rename movies in individual countries, and Italy is doing it very well, because there were posters for The Amateur, which was called Operazione Vendetta, which is...
Operation Vendetta?
Why would you call it The Amateur when someone somewhere has come up with that?
I mean, honestly, just leave it in Italian.
Right, yeah, seriously. Yep. What was the sinner's? Titties or something like
that? That also comes out right after we record.
Pectoral.
Is it e pecetori?
Which does that just mean sinners.
The sinner?
Yeah.
Or he is a sinner?
I just said that so confidently, and I earlier in the episode was like, I believe that fall meant bird for 30 years.
We'll check it later. None of us have seen Sinners yet. Yeah. I'm going tomorrow and very, very excited. The only other things I watched were the three straight movies I watched on the 9-hour flight home.
Oh, I love this.
It started with Gladiator, mainly because, hey, I was just there.
Right.
Just point at the literal floor of the Colosseum and be like, remember when we were standing there?
Wait, and you've still never seen Gladiator,
that was
right?
A first-time watch of Gladiator.
What do you think?
And?
It's good. It's not...
You should have seen it when you were 16.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. And you know, on a movie screen rather than a laptop on the back of the seat in front of me while I'm grumpy and can't move my arms. But I don't know. It's really tropey. The only reason it works is because for 2 whole hours you're like, man, I can't wait to see Joaquin Phoenix get stabbed. That's going to be so great when this little bitch gets stabbed. Right. And without that, I don't know if you really have much of a movie. Like, you know.
I still like it. I feel like I'm in the minority of people in 2025 who care about movies. I still think it's a good movie. I think Russell Crowe is a really great anchor for that movie. Mm. I think that's why that was like a deserved Oscar. I am glad you finally ticked that one off.
That's the most recent Best Picture winner I had not seen.
Mm. I have four to go. Four to go.
Four to go of all of the Best Picture winners?
Yes, and I'm going to try to finish by my birthday, or on my birthday.
I want to know what it is before I go on with this.
What, the one I chose for my birthday?
No, the new most recent Best Picture winner I haven't seen.
While you're looking that up, I do want to tell you that, you know, when I lived in Cape Town, that's a 16-hour flight, and I learned the order of movies. You got to start with something you haven't seen, but you don't super care about. Because, or something that you've sort of remember, because there's going to be a lot of interruptions.
Right.
Right. So you need to not super care about the first one, but have some hook of interest, because, you know, you're coming to terms with the fact you're about to be in this uncomfortable seat for 16 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Second movie, new movie you're excited to see.
Mm.
And then third movie, familiar favorite that hopefully will put you to sleep.
I did not do that order.
Well, you haven't taken so many 16-hour flights.
Yeah, I don't think I could survive 16.
How long was the flight?
9.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
They treat you better on the long hauls.
Not if you're on American Airways operated by British.
I see.
Which is just like being crammed in that sardine can, shame. Maybe with one more snack.
Okay, that's, shame.
The new most... Oh, look at that. The new most recent Oscar Best Picture winner I haven't seen is The English Patient.
Oh!
So probably not getting to that one anytime soon. I started with Gladiator. I did enjoy seeing the places I had just seen in life. Then I watched The Ring. Does not really hold up that well.
The thing about The Ring is that boyfriend sucks.
He's terrible.
Yes. He's the Mika of The Ring.
Yeah. This is the one with Naomi Watts.
Yeah. And she's good, but it's not like supernatural woo-woo enough in the way that the Japanese
movies. I've never seen that one.
I know I've seen it and it's better, but like the Japanese supernatural horror movies of that era have this very like dream logic to them that gives you a reason, like, we have to go to the barn. Whereas this, are they investigating? Are they trying to solve the problem? Or are they just moving from one place to another hope with no hope of success? That's what The Room feels like.
Yeah. I do think the vibes for The Ring are strong. Like, that's why I think that movie is, like, ultimately above water for me. It's like, the fucking horse scene.
I hate the horse scene.
Oh my gosh. I am chilled to the bone.
She's fucking with the horse for no reason.
Yeah.
For anyone who hasn't watched The Ring in 20 years, like I hadn't, she's on the boat going to the place, and part of the lore with the girl and the stuff is that the girl made horses freak out, and now she goes up to, Naomi Watts goes up to a horse trailer, and the horse loses its shit and rampages around the deck of this boat and throws itself off the side, like, very graphically, while the horse's child owner yells, "Daddy, my horse."
Yeah, it's horrifying.
And it's like, this was preventable. The horse started freaking out, and Naomi Watts didn't just walk away. She kept yelling at the horse, I'm not here to hurt you.
I think that's the dream logic thing you were just talking about. That's
kind of missing. And my third movie, this is interesting. This is one of the most unique, unremarkable movies. This is a relative new release. It kind of came out last year. It's called Rumors. Cate Blanchett is in it. Alicia Vikander is in it. It's about the G7, not the G20, the G7 leaders being attacked by bog mummies.
What?
Why?
It is a complete satire. It's mostly a satire of how meaningless political statements are. Like, even as they're continuing to be attacked by bog mummies, they're still drafting their memo of understanding.
What?
And they find Alicia Vikander later, like, worshipping a giant brain that has appeared in the forest. And all of this
Who's
is
responsible for this?
Right? The only... I don't know the filmmakers. I think they're relatively new. Guy Madden, Evan Johnson, and Galen Johnson. There was like one, I think Ari Aster was like an executive producer in a thing kind of a way. It's such a good concept, and watching it, you're just like, this is not very interesting.
That's not uncommon.
But I saw previews for it last year and was pumped for it, and it just did not quite work out. So I don't know. I rewatched Creature from the Black Lagoon. That's still good. Still good. Let's draw a movie. Oh no!
I don't like that.
Lousy with vetoes.
I mean, we should probably be grateful to the fates, and although Robin was one of the fates in getting Titanic in the Birdcage, and accept that they can't all be zingers. But I don't want to watch The War with Grandpa.
Absolutely
no.
Not.
Is that Zac Efron and? Whatever.
It's not even the one with Zac Efron. It's just Robert De Niro is an old man and his child grandson is messing with
him. I have two vetoes, so I will spend one of those.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Exercise my veto, man.
Appreciate you.
I might have one, but...
I don't remember.
Whatever.
I don't think I have one.
I'm pretty sure. Okay. We should do a better job to get it.
I know.
Sorry. Do this? Sorry.
I'll let you have the honor of...
trying to figure that out.
I was going to say of removing the war from grandpa, war with grandpa from our list. So now there's nothing we can do about the next draw, which is, well, we're finishing. We did part one, so let's do Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part Two.
All right.
Yeah,
that's funny.
Okay.
It was also on the plane, and I thought, like, I mean, I could just press play and stick it on the first one.
Yeah.
And go the whole way, but
have you seen it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's funny because I just started reading The Sunrise of The Reaper. And that's why, Tony. Thanks.
Oh, you're right. Is it good?
I just started. So it's like I'm like up maybe two pages in.
If it's good, please text me so that I can read it before we record if that's at all interesting. Oh. Do you want to say why, Tony? Do not fuck with 92-year-old Elaine May or I will come to your house.
Wait, what?
Elaine May is 92 years old, and I'm like, if it is Why Tony that she's going to die soon.
Oh.
Yes. I mean,
Why Tony is because the world deserves joy. That's why we got the Birdcage.
Right. Also, right. I think it's Gene Hackman.
Yeah, yeah, that too. Okay, Mockingjay Part 2. When did we do Mockingjay Part 1?
What's funny is I just posted a teaser on the Instagram for Mockingjay Part 1.
Did you?
Yeah, just randomly.
I'm leaving
just
that
because...
in so everybody can know that this is fate.
Also, to let everyone know, we have an Instagram now because we haven't mentioned that on camera.
That's right. Nomia_podcast on Instagram. Follow us, please. Thank you.
Camila's been doing a really good job of pulling old clips that show off how fun our show is.
Yeah.
So back to the Panem. Panem. Back. We will go back to Panem. Panem.
Panem? I say Panem.
Panem. Yeah, that's Panem.
Panem?
Panem.
That's the District 12 way of pronouncing it. Before we do that, The Birdcage, March 8th, 1996. What was the number one song in America?
Mariah Carey.
Yes.
Dream Lover?
No.
Fantasy?
Not only Mariah Carey.
And Boys to Men.
End of the
one sweet,
one sweet day. That's it.
Yes.
That's one of those. It had like 90 weeks ones.
Yeah. And why did it. It's nothing.
I'm not that into it. It's never made its way on any of my playlists.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good standard.
The only interesting thing about this is for 25 years or whatever, I thought this song was about somebody. It's not. Mm. I thought this was like a tribute to a specific person who had died.
Right, I'll be missing you.
Yeah, like there was some, I don't know, record industry person or collaborator that, and so they came together. And no, it's just about like the concept of
just the monies.
Sometimes people you know die and you remember them. Yeah.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't think we needed all five of you to explain that to us.
Number